You may have heard last week the man who created the world's first index mutual fund, which eventually became known as the Vanguard S&P 500 Index Fund, passed away at age 89. His name was John Bogle and was founder and chief executive at the Vanguard Group. Now, John was recently a guest on my program and was one of the most important investment thinkers that I have followed throughout my career. John was a fierce advocate for the average investor, and although it took me a number of years to appreciate his thoughts, I became a staunch supporter about 20 years ago. You see, I started my career in the belly of a large Wall Street firm. Back then, it was and still is a sales-driven world. Customers were looked upon as generators of revenues, and sales practices emphasized maximum commissions regardless of the client's real interests. Back then, too, mutual funds were the accepted method for money management and diversification. Money managers who were able to post stellar returns were treated as celebrities and gurus offering us the chance to ride on their magical coattails. Mutual funds in those days would be sold with large upfront commissions and high internal expenses, which would essentially strip away much of the return the fund investor would receive. Into this world stepped John C. Bogle. While he was not an advocate of index funds in the beginning, once he decided it was the right thing to do, he took to it with a vengeance, started the Vanguard Group, and began offering the first inexpensive index fund as a no-load fund, meaning there would be no upfront sales commission. His insistence on integrity and his unwavering drive to continually lower costs would make him many enemies in the business and many friends among the do-it-yourself investment community. As individuals like myself broke away from the Wall Street culture and started our own registered investment advisory firms, index funds started to gain acceptance in our profession, and I'm proud to have contributed a small amount to this historic movement. So, here is the recent interview where John reminisced about his trip to the Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting and his career in the investment industry. I know you will find his humility and his down-to-earth way quite refreshing. As always, if you want to hear this interview again or pass it along to friends or write in a question, go to stevepomerantz.com. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly update to see and hear all of the information we provide to improve your financial life. That's stevepomerantz.com. I think you all know my next guest. He is Jack Bogle, the founder of the Vanguard Group and the creator of Vanguard S&P 500 Index Fund, which was the very first S&P 500 index mutual fund in the world, I suppose. You may also know that Jack speaks out as an advocate for the average investor. He's author of numerous books and the recipient of many prestigious awards. As a matter of fact, in 2004, Time magazine named him one of the world's 100 most powerful and influential people. And it's a pleasure for me to have Jack Bogle with me today. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. It's always good to be with you.
Thank you. You know, we've been doing a series about Warren Buffett in light of the recent Berkshire annual shareholders meeting in Omaha. We interviewed Lawrence Cunningham, the author of The Warren Buffett Shareholder, in which you wrote a short piece about your experience in 2017. Please share with us that experience.
Well, it was really a great thrill and a great surprise. My friend Steve Galbraith, a money manager from New England, told me to save the date, the day before my birthday last year. And I didn't know what he wanted. I did save the date. And he says, pulls up in a Cessna Citation and flies me out to Omaha. Mm-hmm. And he said, we're going to the Warren's annual meeting. And so we had a nice time. Our wives were with us and some of my family members were there. And I still didn't know what to expect. So I'm sitting in the audience right at the beginning of Warren's kind of background recap of his year. And he starts to talk about me. And he says, Jack Bogle has done probably more for the American investor than any man in the country. Jack, would you stand up? And I did stand up. And there was this wave of applause. Mm-hmm. I don't think many people get that. And I think in Larry's book, I'm probably the only one who wrote a piece about getting a shout out from Warren.
Right.
And it was quite long. Mm-hmm. And wonderfully rewarding. And surprising to my wife, but it was just a delightful way to be there and to get a little recognition. He also wants to put up a statue for me as being the greatest friend wow. of the American investors.
Wow.
So Warren and I have had a not a close but very positive relationship for probably 20 years, actually about 30 years. And when I first met him in a hotel in San Diego, California, we were both speaking to a convention group. And we go back and forth with letters. He's endorsed my books. And he's endorsed indexing.
I know.
Index investing over and over and over again in, I think, 8 of his annual reports, maybe a few less than that. And so we have a lot in common.
Yeah.
And the index fund is his recommendation to almost any investor who asks him, what should I do if I don't buy Berkshire Hathaway?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, he's been recommending index funds since 1996. And he famously used the index fund as a bet against a hedge fund coming out of the crash in 08, betting that the index fund would do better. And I don't know if you've seen the numbers. I surely have seen the numbers. And the S&P 500 walloped that hedge fund. It was actually pretty pathetic. It was actually a fund of funds. So supposedly the hedge fund was hiring the best hedge fund managers and putting them all together and weeding them out and putting others in and so on. And even with all that, you know, they couldn't even come close to the simple S&P 500. So he won the bet, and about $3 million went to a local charity, which was pretty terrific.
That's what he did. And it's interesting, your choice, the way he hired the best hedge fund managers, the rival did. But the reality is the best is always looked at backward. Who did best last year, last 10 years, 15 years? And it doesn't repeat itself. So that failure was really to be expected. And I was rooting, of course, with Warren every step of the way. And the bet came in just about the time of the annual meeting last year. And actually, one of the participants at a dinner I went to was the loser in that bet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting kind of way for Warren to show his confidence. An even more interesting way, Steve, is that he has directed the trustee of his wife's estate put 90% of the trust into Vanguard 5, well, essentially into Vanguard 500 index fund, and 10% into short-term governments.
Yeah.
So that's a tribute, but money can't buy.
Well, let's go back to the beginning a little bit. You know, I read that the professor, the American economist, Paul Samuelson, had a strong influence on you at the very beginning. What was he writing about? He eventually won a Nobel Prize for it. What was he writing about, and what was he finding in his data that led you to create the S&P 500 fund?
Well, he was the guy. I actually been talking about an index fund, believe it or not, Steve, since my Princeton University thesis in 1951, where I said mutual funds can make no claim to superiority over the market indexes. Mm-hmm. So it was not a new subject for me. But Paul Samuelson was the precipitating force that made me act when I did act. We had just started Vanguard on September 26th, 1994, and about 2 weeks later, I opened the pages of the Journal of Portfolio Management, and there is an article called Challenge to Judgment by Paul Samuelson. And in that challenge, he says, show me the brute evidence, was his phrase, that an active manager can beat an index fund, and no one has yet shown me that brute evidence. We have thought about an index fund, starting one by professors, but we don't have the resources to do it. So I hope somebody someday we'll start an index fund. And here's this new company, Vanguard, a mutual company looking not to make money for its managers, but to make money for its shareholders. And it was like, for the want of a better expression, Steve, manna from heaven. I started thinking about it very heavily then, and within a year had gotten approval of the board of directors to do it. Our first decision as a new company called Vanguard.
You know, I know that he wrote later, and I have a quote from him. He says, I rank this Bogle invention along with the invention of the wheel, the alphabet, Gutenberg printing, and wine and cheese, a mutual fund that never made Bogle rich but elevated the long-term returns of mutual fund owners, something new under the sun. Now, you know, the Gutenberg printing, the wheel, the alphabet, but I think the wine and cheese portion of that is probably the greatest gift.
Well, that may be the greatest gift, but it's probably the fairest comparison too, Steve.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, I'm not doing better than Mr. Gutenberg.
Sure. Oh, I see. So wine and cheese is about your level.
Those citations of his basically were world-changing. And in the case of Vanguard and the index fund, We changed the world of finance, but not the world.
Yeah. I want to get into that. I want to start talking about specifically what is operating here in the idea of these index funds versus the standard mutual funds, actively managed funds versus what we call passively managed funds. So let's start with fees. I know that's a big part of it. There's a lot of pressure on fees in mutual funds these days, pressure for them to go down, which is a good thing. And it was mostly started by, you know, your company's relentless drive to lower fees in the index funds and then see that index funds are, you know, mostly are really outperforming these higher fee mutual funds. You wrote that the average expense ratio in 1960 was 0.48%. And by the way, expense ratio is that amount that you're paying inside the fund that if you look closely, you'll see it's a percentage of assets. So in 1960, it was 0.48, whereas now it stands at more than twice that amount at 0.98%. So I'm a little confused because I see mutual fund fees coming down. What is actually happening with the cost of mutual funds? Are they rising still or are they falling?
That's a good question and a fair question, Steve. Number one, they did drop in the early years to something around 50 basis points, 0.48, 0.46, and they're now, in fairness, about 0.70. They've come down a little bit in recent years as the funds have grown. So what's happened is, while the market has carried these assets upward of mutual funds, the managers have not shared the economies of scale with the investors.
Yeah.
Just think about this. I can't do the math in my head, but apply a 50 basis point fee to a $5 billion industry and then apply a 70 basis point fee to an $18 trillion industry.
Right.
I mean, the dollar amount of the fees is staggering, and very few of those economies of scale have been shared with the fund investors who created them in the first place.
Yeah, you know, in today's world, if you think about Amazon and you think about these very thin margins, and they're looking to create tremendous volume in order to earn their living. Mutual funds, for some reason, I think we can compare the index fund to kind of Amazon in that regard, lowering the cost, passing through the savings of greater assets under management to the shareholder of Vanguard funds and other funds as well. But you're saying that these mutual fund companies are keeping the difference for themselves.
That is correct. They often have 40 of the 50 largest fund complexes actually are owned by international conglomerates or U.S. conglomerates, and they buy those companies, the fund companies, to earn more money for their own shareholders. Mm-hmm. They want a return on their capital. They'd like to get a return on the shareholders' capital too, but those two objectives, making money for ourselves and making money for our clients, are directly conflicting.
Yeah. So basically, it's up to the individual investor to awaken and understand what is actually going on or work with an advisor who understands that as well and strives to put his or her clients in those kinds of low-cost investments. You know, Wall Street is a sales-driven entity. It's all really about profits. There's no doubt about that. Today, we see a proliferation of new products claiming to get better returns than simple indexing. So now I want to kind of switch gears a little bit because way back when, we had active managers, individuals, or teams who tried to beat the markets. Now we have big data and perhaps in the future, AI, which pretends or portends to be better than simple indexing. So my question is, these are called smart beta funds. What is smart beta and what are your thoughts on these new inventions?
Well, smart beta is described by William Sharpe, the Nobel laureate from Stanford, as stupid. There is no smart beta. You know, there's a reality in all this, Steve, and that is for all investors as a group, there is a market return out there. And when all those investors get together, they're going to get the index return collectively, because they own the index, these hundreds of thousands of investors or millions of investors. And so they're going to pay about 2% a year for that privilege. And the index investor is going to pay about 4 basis points, 4/100ths of 1% for that privilege. So guess who's going to win?
Yeah, just by that very factor alone.
Yeah, and think of it, the dimension of it for an investor. Let's assume an investor has a lifetime of 50 years of investing. And most of them will be much longer than that in these age of extended mortality tables and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if you invest for 50 years at 7%, let's assume, you'll earn about $30, $32 on each dollar you put in. Amazing. And if you invest in and get 5%, that would be the 7 minus the 2, you'll get about $10. So you get more than 3 times as much capital just by getting cost out of the equation.
Yeah.
If we could get that message across to everybody, right, we'd get a real revolution.
Yeah. So it's this magic of compounding, which is so important for people really to understand, is the way the capital expands after so many years. You know, if Warren Buffett is worth, you know, $70 billion today, and he earns a 7% rate of return, or Berkshire does, and he has his shares, he's going to be worth $140 billion in 10 years.
That is correct.
And it's very simple math, and it's this the law of, you know, of compounding. And that's why, you know, really the big returns will come later in life, but you've got to kind of stick with it early on. And let's get to the difficulty of sticking with it, Jack. By the way, my guest is Jack Bogle, the founder of the Vanguard Group and creator of the Vanguard S&P 500 Fund. Let's talk about the individual investor and their propensity to do exactly the wrong thing at the wrong time. They want to buy when the markets are up, especially if it's at an all-time high and getting exciting. They're bearish when the market is an all-time low and they want to sell. You know, that's a sure way to lose money. You know, I'm an investment advisor and I see this every day. I work hard to convince people to do kind of the opposite of what they want to do in tough times. First of all, do you think there is a role for a fiduciary investment intermediary who is going to increase the costs of investing, but perhaps enable clients to succeed at it in the long run?
Well, let me say a couple of things. Let me start by talking about compounding, because I want to have a comment on that.
Sure.
And that is, what I say is, enjoy the miracle of compounding long-term returns without the tyranny of compounding long-term costs. So there's a double compounding, one of which helps you enormously, one of which hurts you enormously. Now, when you come to the role of the financial advisor, the question you just asked, of course there's a role for a financial advisor. It requires him to be very knowledgeable about the business, certainly to appreciate the role of cost and focus on low-cost funds that he offers to his clientele, and aware that, as Morningstar has said, they have a very sophisticated performance rating system for funds. They have candidly said that you will do better than their performance rating system at Morningstar if you just buy the lowest cost funds. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good concession. So
yes, for Morningstar,
you want very
yeah.
low costs in mm-hmm. an index fund. And there's also a reasonable way to look at actively managed funds and think about them in terms of their costs. And by costs, I mean not only their expense ratios, which are very easy to measure and compare, but also their portfolio turnover. It's a very high hidden cost.
Yeah.
And if you go with funds with lower portfolio turnover as well as low expense ratio, you will do much better. An advisor should be aware of all this, and I'm sure the best advisors are. They would also be well advised, I think, that every time someone comes in and says, see how this fund is done, it beat the index by a lot, and I'm sure advisors hear that and maybe even say that. Just they should remember that the past is not prologue,
yeah,
and that there's a lot of reversion to the mean. That's the key in this business, where the good funds turn out to be bad and the bad funds turn out to be good. And that brings me to your question about investor behavior. And investor behavior is really quite bad in the mutual fund industry. That's the only measure we have. And it looks as though, and Morningstar measures this, and it looks as though the returns reported by the mutual funds are reduced by about 1.5% a year or 2% a year by the returns for the investors that investors actually earn.
Mm-hmm.
So fund investors minus 2% compared to what you receive from the funds.
Yeah.
It's a huge loss. And the reasons are pretty much what you say, a little bit different. I mean, certainly acting at market highs, when optimism is high, you're optimistic and you buy, of course, and the reverse when markets are low. But it goes over in the mutual fund business to buying funds that have done very well in the
yeah.
past.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how they don't repeat. We should not, I don't want to go too far here, but if we didn't allow the production of past performance records, we would be a lot better off in this industry. That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. You're right. My guest, Jack Bogle, founder of the Vanguard Group, creator of the Vanguard S&P 500 Fund, and outspoken critic of Wall Street, but also advocate of the average investor. Jack, thank you for spending your precious time with us today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Steve. Good to be with you.
So it was fun talking with Jack Bogle. If you have a question about what we just discussed, ask us. Go to stevepomerantz.com. Ask us anything you'd like. That's stevepomerantz.com. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly update, where we will send you the weekly commentaries and interviews straight to your inbox.